We are in Chovas Halvavos, Shaar HaBitachon. We're still in the introduction, toward the end. Okay. Last week we spent some time talking about Hishtadlus, very complex sugya of Hishtadlus, and we discussed basically the bottom line of what we discussed was that there are guidelines. On the one hand, the whole sugya of Hishtadlus versus Bitachon is complicated, it's foggy, it gets ambiguous, often we don't know where you draw the line. So we said that on the one hand, it is hard to give, you know, absolute guidelines as to what, yeah, what not, and when. Very much boils down to the individual situation. On the other hand, what we said is that we can provide broad strokes in terms of how to approach it. It doesn't have to be as just ambiguous as it's sometimes made out to be. And what we discussed last week was a few of the different question marks that are involved in this whole issue. How will it affect your health? How will it affect your spiritual welfare? There are a number of priorities that have to be juggled. Again, we aren't laying down a bottom line decision, but we're saying that there are a number of priorities that have to be juggled when you are making your decision about whether should I do this Hishtadlus or not. The point being, don't just narrowly focus on the fact that I have to make a living, and this is the only option available to me, and therefore I have to do it because I have a Chiyuv Hishtadlus. Chiyuv Hishtadlus is one priority among others. This is what the Chovas Halvavos wants us to understand. It's one priority among others, and sometimes you have to ask yourself, how will this affect if we just go with the things that he said? Is it a type of job that will either involve me in physical activity that will wear me down too much? Is it something that will affect my health? Is it something that will involve too much intrigue? That we said, he gave the example of, which we might translate into practical terms as politics. If you can get into a position that will involve backstabbing and all of that, all of those stresses, how will it affect my spiritual welfare? Will it mean that I'm not going to be able to daven like a mensch anymore? Will it mean that I'll no longer have any time for learning? All of these things are question marks that have to be considered because the Chiyuv Hishtadlus does not necessarily come before all these things. Sometimes by just raising a question mark, that already provides a lot of clarity. Often, this is not bringing us to the end of the road in terms of figuring it out, but just being aware of that, let's remember, Hishtadlus, even though we say that we have a Chiyuv Hishtadlus, that does not mean that, once again, he's trying to move us away from a sense of desperately wanting to work it out. Understand that Hishtadlus, you're approaching it as Ratzon Hashem. Hashem has other desires also. Hashem has other things that he wants from you also. He wants you to have a functional family life. He wants you to be healthy. He wants you to have a level of Menuchas HaNefesh. Like we said last week, this doesn't mean that you can obviate stress, right? He wants you to have a level of menuchas nefesh that your Hishtadlus should knock out the window. And he wants you to have a certain spiritual regimen, a certain spiritual level. Two different points, by the way, right? Spiritual regimen as in, again, I'm talking in men's terms. Women's terms, it'll play out differently. But does it mean that I'm going to have no learning at all in my life? This might not be the right thing for me. Does it mean that I have to completely lower my tzniyah standards? The environment that I'm putting myself into might not be the right thing for me. And standards, right? Is this an area that's going to get me into all kinds of different compromised question marks? We all understand that. A job that requires you to actually work, do malacha on Shabbos, we say, Hishtadlus, Hishtadlus, but this comes first. So it can become more refined than that also. Various halachic standards, spiritual standards. This is not an environment that's good for my spirituality. These are all things to consider. And Hishtadlus does not necessarily, the value of Hishtadlus does not necessarily override these values. Okay, that was that. Now we move on to So the Chavos HaLevavos was describing this as benefits, material benefits of bitach. Right, let's remember the context. We're in the discussion now of what are the material benefits of bitach. The material benefits that we're talking about are that a person will be capable of just comfortably saying, my health comes first. Right? If you don't have bitachon, you say, I'm going to die of starvation if I don't take this job. I am going to wear myself down and I'm going to completely do myself physically, but what choice do I have? But the person with bitachon is able to comfortably say, Hashem does not want me to sacrifice my health. If this is the only choice available to me, that means that this is not what Hashem expects me to do. And Hashem will do as he sees fit. Here I have the right to let go. I have the right to let go. I do not have an obligation to take this route if I know that it's going to do my health in. I have a right to let go. And my bitachon tells me that Hashem will take care of me as he sees fit. So that's the material benefit. You are able to comfortably let go of these various routes, these various jobs that will either do in your health, your physical state, your family life, etc. Okay. Now we move on. Mehen. Other material benefits of bitachon are miutza nafshoy b'mischor. That a person has much less distress in his business matters. This is a chash of a point. If a person runs into business problems.
This is at the bottom of
362. Oh, thank you. I forgot that. In the English, you said 362, page 362 toward the bottom. If you are stuck with merchandise that you can't get rid of, if you have a bad debt, a debt that you can't collect. So the person with bitachon, his attitude is, Hashem does what he sees fit. Hashem is taking care of me, right? I am going through the motions. I'm running a business because Hashem expects me to. But I don't have to guarantee its success. I have to do everything reasonable to make sure it succeeds, that yes. But if I run into something, businesses always do. If I run into a situation that I'm just up against a dead end, I'm stuck. So he says, okay, this Hashem set this up. I followed his guidelines. Again, it all comes back to the same point. Hashem is providing your panasa according to his plan, but he expects you to do ishtavus, right? On condition that you do reasonable ishtavus. Once I'm doing reasonable, if you're not doing reasonable ishtavus, then you can't say, Hashem wants me to have the money at the end of the month, I'll have it. Can't say that. Hashem says, no, there's a ticket you have to punch. And that ticket is called reasonable ishtablis. But if I am doing the reasonable ishtablis, then I can comfortably say, if I got stuck, this is what Hashem decided for me for now, and this is what's best for me. There's an important point to stress. If a person skips his ishtablis, he does not have the right to say, if I have no money at the end of the month, this is what Hashem wants for me. You can say that. Hashem wants... The Chavos HaLevavos makes that point later, that part of Hashem's process of getting, Hashem decides what you should get, right? And what you shouldn't. Part of his process, and he has a process of getting it to you. Part of that process is you doing the steps that he's imposing on you. For example, take the simple, a simpler example. Hashem decided that you should be very comfortable this month, okay? You should have everything you need this month. Okay, so I'm sitting at the table, Baruch Hashem, I have all I need. I bought myself a very lavish lunch. Okay, Hashem wants me to have everything I need. I'm sitting down. And now I fold my arms and I look at the lunch and I say, if Hashem wants me to be nourished, I'll be nourished without taking any of the necessary steps. I'm not going to pick up that fork. Right? I'm just going to say, I'm not going to pick up that fork. If Hashem wants me to starve, I'll starve. If Hashem wants me to be well fed, I'll be well fed. What do we say about that? Hashem wants you to be well fed. He has a process that he wants to get you, through which to get you that food. One of the steps in that process is going to the store. Another step in that process is putting the food in the pot. Another step in that process is picking up the fork, right? If you decide not to pick up the fork, you can't say, Hashem decreed on me that I should go hungry. No, Hashem has it ready for you, but he imposed certain steps on you. So this is what we say about reasonable ishtavlis. Hashem decided what he decided, but he imposed reasonable steps on you. If you skipped those reasonable steps, you can't come and say, well, this is what Hashem decided for me. But if you did those reasonable steps, then here's where we say, don't start saying, I wasn't sure. I had money to invest. And I wasn't sure if I should invest it in this stock or in that stock. I don't know. If I should invest it in real estate or in some new product. Okay, I wasn't sure. And I made a responsible assessment of the reality. I made a responsible assessment of the reality. I consulted with people in the field, and I decided to go for the new product. And now you know what? It turned out to be a dud. So here is the difference between the person with bitachon and the person without bitachon. The person whose bitachon is lacking will say, I should have gone for the real estate. The person with bitachon says, I understand that no, all that I was supposed to do was take responsible steps, and then Hashem will do what he decided for me. I took those responsible steps. Hashem decided that he wants me now to go through a difficult couple of weeks. Had I gone into a real estate, it would have been the same thing there. So in other words, we have license, we have access to what Hashem decided of us, for us, once we do those reasonable steps. But once we did them, the Baal Bitachon is capable of feeling completely at ease and saying, this is what Hashem wants for me, this is what's best for me. I know that I did what he expected of me, I took those responsible steps, and now I feel completely at ease. I'm stuck with this product, an unsellable product. I'm stuck with it now, and now my financial situation got complicated. This was Hashem's gzeira for me. This is what Hashem wants for me. This is best for me. A question. Okay.
So when you talk about, when the book talks about material benefits, so the first one I understand, the allows you to let go because you get material benefit of your health or time to learn or, you know, whatever it is. There's something, you know, pushy. You feel like material benefit is something pushy. But here you're saying it allows me to let go of the results. Whatever happens, happens. That doesn't sound like a material benefit. Material would...
Where's the material? The question is.
Aggravation.
Oh, very good.
The material benefit.
That's the answer.
Not the result, but the fact that you're not aggravated about the result.
Good. Okay, good. So let's repeat the question and the answer. The question was, so it's saying that you can let go and you know that Hashem is doing what's best for you. Where's the material benefit in that? Lemaisa, I'm going through those difficult weeks. Now, where's the material benefit? And the answer is, and this is really a point that he's making, miut tsar nafshay. When a person really developed that bitachon, he is less distressed by it. He is comfortable with the fact that, with the understanding that I'm being handled by someone who knows better for me what's good for me. This is what's best for me. And therefore, it might be tough, but I'm not distressed. It's like the difference between and a person who is having a needle stuck into his arm by someone who he knows is an expert doctor that he spent months. I don't know. I don't like needles stuck into my arm. When I go for a blood test, when I go for a shot, I'm one of those people who looks away and right. I don't like needles stuck into my arm. But you know what? If I did research, I decided this is the doctor to go to, and he says, "My friend, I have to stick a needle into your arm." I'm not enjoying it, but I'm not worried, right? I'm not worried. I'm not distressed. I'm not aggravated. It's not fun, but this is what is best for me. I'm perfectly comfortable with what's going on, even though I'm not enjoying it, right? I much prefer a coffee to a needle stuck into my arm. That's not going to change, even if I'm comfortable with it, even if I'm comfortable with it, right? So, but let's say you're walking through the street at night, suddenly someone grabs you from behind, and before you know it, there's a needle stuck into your arm. He might do it even more gently than the doctor. But it's a whole different experience. You're terrified. What's going on here, right? What is he injecting in me? That's the difference. That's the difference. In the first case, the prick, I don't like the prick. It's not going to change, right? But I'm very confident in the fact that I want this prick, even though it hurts, right? So that's what we mean here. That's what we mean here. You're going through a difficult couple of weeks with the knowledge of, this is very good for me. How? I'm in the best of hands, and this is what he decided for me. He knows better for me, better than me, what's good for me. Okay.
Okay, so my question was...
Question, yeah.
Yes, was... It's like these Rokhishtadalists, it's always so hard to know. Let's say you lift the fork and you put the food in and you're not nourished. Well, maybe I should have taken a vitamin. Maybe I should have eaten different food. Maybe this, maybe that. Like, it's so hard to just draw the line. The guy who did the research, he said, well, maybe I should have researched one more thing here or one more thing there. Like, it's so hard to know where to draw the line. And you don't have a pocket rug. You can just, like, open up and say, oh, I did it. You know, like.
The question is, we are saying, we're putting a lot of weight on this phrase, reasonable hishtadlus. You do your reasonable hishtadlus, then you can be comfortable that you did yours and Hashem is taking care of it as he sees fit. But the question is, how do you ever know that it was really reasonable? So here, we're allowed to say it as follows. We're allowed to say it as follows. Reasonable means reasonable. Meaning what? What it means is Hashem does not require you, Hashem requires you to take a responsible approach. He does not require you to go overboard with obsession. Where exactly do you draw the line? Figuring out exactly at which precise degree to draw the line is going overboard. And that Hashem doesn't require of you. Hashem wants you to approach it responsibly. You know if you're handling it responsibly or if, meaning you often have a sense that in order to really approach this responsibly, I should turn over one or two more stones. Then I'll have a clear enough picture. Sometimes you have a clear picture. You feel like I haven't turned over every last stone. You don't necessarily have to do. Where exactly do you draw the line? That might be subject to the individual. But the point is, be honest with yourself. Am I being lazy? If I'm not being lazy, if I'm being responsible, you know what? Even in terms of my research, I have to juggle it with other things going on in my life. That's part of the definition of reasonable. Hashem doesn't require you now to become an absolute expert, right? And to study the field, you do your best in your situation. If you can honestly tell yourself, I'm handling this responsibly, I'm not being lax about this, don't worry about the precise degrees. That's all included in the definition of responsible when it comes to health. You know, that's his next point. Let's see now a few more words. Same thing when it comes to health. The same thing goes if a person is struck with illness, chalila. It's the same idea. I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned, even if chalila, this is an illness that can get a person to the grave, because I'm in the best of hands. Now, you have to be responsible when it comes to health. You have to be responsible when it comes to health. To what degree? You can turn it into a full-time job, right? In terms of exercise and food and all the different aspects of health. Or you can be completely nonchalant about it and just eat whatever, wherever, whenever, and not be at all on top of, you know, your physical state. Where do you draw the line? It really depends on the individual. You have to be conscious of your health. You can't ignore health issues. You can't ignore health issues. You have to be responsible about health. How far do you have to go? You know what? That depends. A person who has a lot of money, a lot of time, and not much else going on in his life should invest more efforts in it. Should invest more efforts in it. A person who has a lot of responsibilities, not that much money, and a lot going on, should also be conscious of it, but it comes to the same thing, not to turn it into an obsession, not to turn it into an obsession. You don't want to ignore the issue. You want to handle it responsibly, but not to allow it to turn into an obsession. Don't just ignore health, right? Be as conscientious about it as you can without it starting to turn into something that's taking you over, making you nervous. Emotional health is part of the equation. Sometimes, you can take issue with what I'm about to say. I might take issue with what I'm about to say. Sometimes an ice cream cone is nutritional for your emotional health. Now, if you'll tell me, you know what? My emotional health is very demanding. And I need 6 ice cream cones a day, and that's besides all of my cigarettes. So they say, you know what? You have to start looking in a different direction. Okay. So yes, it's about being responsible without going overboard in terms of obsessing. What exactly does that mean? It means something else for every person. Okay. So now, whatever the case is, again, you did yours. You approached it responsibly. I will just note, I mean, the Lashon of the Chazon Ish, the Lashon of the Chazon Ish, where he says that a person's taking care of his health, a very profound take on that. He says that, well, I'll tell you his Lashon, beautiful Lashon. It's when Avodos Ahuvos Lefanav Yisbarach, it's a cherished area of Avodas Hashem. This is what Chazon Ish says. It's a cherished area of Avodas Hashem. So think about that. We think in terms of, you know, what are areas of Avodas Hashem to, if I want to, you know, improve in some area, right? Tefillah, there's midas, there's different areas, there's halacha, there's learning Torah. It's another area of attention to my well-being. It's another, calling that mamashit, it's an amazing lashon. Avodah is always a banu yisbarach. It's a beloved area of avodah by Hashem. And the perspective that he gives on this is that he says, what is derech hateva? What is derech hateva? This is also very fundamental in itself, besides all context of bitach. Chazon Ish is a definition of derech hateva. Derech hateva, he says, is harotzen hayeser masmid shel avodah. Derech HaTeva is not a self, an independent system, and now you have to move through that with the Torah and try to live life. It is the predictable, ongoing Ratzon Hashem. That's Derech HaTeva. That's really the difference between the sun coming up in the morning and Kriyas Yamsuf. What's the difference between the sun coming up in the morning and Kriyas Yamsuf? Well, one's natural and one's not natural. What does that mean? Mavigdor Miller writes in one of his books, nature is a meaningless word invented by the Greeks. Right? What is nature? Nature means what Hashem does on a regular basis. What's a nes? A nes is something that Hashem does not usually do. It's a step out of his routine. But the sun coming up every day is just as much what's an Hashem as the sea splitting. And that means another thing. That means that the way your body functions and what's good for you and what's bad for you in terms of health is also part of Ratzon Hashem. And therefore, by cooperating with your body's health demands, it's the perspective the Chazon Ish gives, you are cooperating with Ratzon Hashem. Okay. Well, whatever the case is, you did your reasonable ishtadlis, reasonable as defined, and then you feel at ease with things that come your way. Why? Because you know that Hashem is conducting your affairs and knows what's best for you better than you do. And He is choosing what's best for you better than you can pick for yourself. It always comes back to that. Bitachon does not mean, you know, this way I get the job. This way I don't get the job. I have trust that I will get the job. It's not what bitachon means. Bitachon means the trust that it's only Hashem making the decision, not the boss, not this, not that. It's only Hashem making the decision. It's completely in His hands, and He is going to make the decision best for me, and I feel secure in that knowledge. That's what bitachon means.
Where does tefillah fit into Hishtadlis?
Where does tefillah fit into Ishtar? That's a good question.
I mean, can you just sit and daven? You can't do that, probably, and just say, my food will come to me. But can you just go get your food and not daven? Or how does the whole equation add up?
Where does tefillah fit into Ishtar? So the answer is that, I'm sorry?
Tefillah always fits into everything.
That's right. That's really the answer. Meaning to say as follows. Tefillah does not replace Ishtar. I'm talking on an hour level, meaning it could be, you know, Bezos Hashem, we're going to learn this subject for 200 years. And at that point, the rules might start changing. I'm serious about that. There were people, there were Tanoim, for whom they reached a place where the rules started changing. And Bezos Hashem, let's be in touch in 200 years. But as far as the starting point, as far as the rule, as far as the way we operate, tefillah does not replace Ishtadlis. Tefillah is a very fundamental part of Ishtadlis. We have to realize that. Tefillah is a fundamental part of Hishtadlus. It's part of the equation, just like we understand that Hishtadlus can have various aspects to it, right? There's research, and then there's going presentably to an interview. These are both important, right? You can't say, I'm going to do the research, and then I'm not going to prepare for the interview because I'm putting more effort into researching other options. You research, you got an interview. Now you have another piece of Hishtadlus that you have to do. You have to prepare for the interview, right? So another piece of Hishtadlus is tefillah. Now, it's important to understand more than that. Tefillah also connects you to a higher level of whatever it is you're getting. That's going to be a little bit abstract right now. I'll just say it in an abstract way, and maybe another time we will we'll elaborate on it more. But it's important to realize you can see two people walking through the street, basically in the same life circumstance. Both have parnasa, and both are healthy, okay? But if you're going to look at the spiritual picture, one of them, his parnasa is coming from a source called Olam Kimin Haganayim. There are rules to the world. Some people will make it, some people won't. He's one of the people who made it. And then there's another person whose parnasa is coming from a place of Hashem has been following his progress. This person is in a place where he bought himself to, that he's going to use his parnasa very well, and that he's going to know how to appreciate it. And therefore, Hashem is intimately involved and is directly feeding him his parnasa, so to speak. It's not coming from, there's two ways it can work. Hashem can, if you think of it in these terms, Hashem can, you know, throw a bunch of fish food out into the pond, and some fish will get more than others, right? And the fish who got a lot can't necessarily consider him any closer to the one who threw out the fish food, right? Not a handful. Right? Hashem operates that way with the world. Throws out a lot, some will get, some won't. There are all kinds of statistics as to what will happen to who in all kinds of different areas, business and health. But then there's the person that Hashem says, no, I'm taking a more intimate interest in your life program. Therefore, your food, the food that's entering your body is coming from a higher place. It's something more kaddish. The food is actually connecting you with Hashem in a much more profound way. You're not just part of a system that Hashem is sprinkling the food out to, and may the best man win. You are being hand-fed by Hashem. And here's where tefillah moves your whole life system into a much higher place, right? When you are getting things as a result of your tefillah, when you're getting things as a result of the awareness that you gained through your tefillah, it all carries that much more significance. I'll give one example. When Chana davened for a child, she said, "If you grant me this child, he will be I will make him a nazir. I'll make him a nazir to Hashem." Right? Shmuel was a nazir. The Ramban explains something very significant, a very significant concept that's relevant in so many areas. So that the reason, what's the idea? We have this concept of making a vow. We're not supposed to make real nidar. But let's take the concept here. There is a concept which was used in earlier times, today we're discouraged, of making a neder when you're davening for something. If you give it to me, I will XYZ. What's the idea? I'm trying to bribe Hashem? What's the idea? It's not about bribing. It's not that, that makes it worth it for Hashem. That's not what's going on. What's going on is, Rabban says, when you make a neder, and then you fulfill that neder, you are making a concrete monument to the fact that what happened here is a result of tefillah, right? Shmuel was born. Okay, Baruch Hashem, she had a baby after 19 years. Or are you seeing a response, a divine response to a tefillah? Are you seeing something divine that happened here, right? So therefore, by saying, I'm going to make a neder, what you're saying is, I'm going to make a monument to your intervention. I'm going to make a tangible demonstration of the fact that this child is an answer to my tefillah. So if you can experience your monthly check, your daily breakfast, as Hashem responding to your tefillah for pranasa in general, right, then all of your food is on a higher level. You're living in a different place. And that's really what the whole concept of a bracha is. That's the whole concept of making a bracha before you eat. You make a bracha before you eat. What are you doing? You are connecting to the source of the bracha. You're connecting to the source of the bracha. And now you're turning this food into a personal gift from Hashem rather than Hashem threw it all out and you got some just like everybody else got some. That's where tefillah fits into the equation. That's in very brief. It's a bigger subject, but that's where tefillah fits into the equation. A, it's an important part of Ishtadlus, just in the practical sense. Sometimes Hashem has something laid out for you that He'll only give you if you decide to daven for it. But I don't know if I should say more than that. Or second, I won't say more than that. I don't know what's more than what. Additionally, tefillah moves everything in your life to a higher, more divine level. Your whatever you have in your life is now the effect of bringing Hashem more directly into your life and bringing to a place where he's more intimately involved in conducting your life. Okay. I'll just say this, the next point out, Baal Peh, in a minute or two, so then we'll move into the next chapter next week, Mu'inada. He takes what we just said now to the next level. When a person is able to feel calm and secure about things that come his way with the understanding that he's in the hands of someone who knows much better than him, I'm in the hands of someone who knows better than me what's good for me, the next level of that is to actually be excited about it. This is a higher level, but let's expose ourselves to it. We talked about, there's a few levels of it. It's facing a challenge with equanimity. I understand that this is being done by the one who has my best interests in mind. But then there's an even higher level of Hashem is sending this my way. This is what Hashem is designing for me. I'm excited about it. How can I move through this challenge correctly? We'll kind of put it this way. We'll, if you have an Olympic athlete whose coach is constantly trying to get him to the next level, so on the one hand, he already mastered jumping to this height, right? And now his coach is saying, okay, next time we meet, we're going to move it a step higher. On the one hand, he's nervous. He doesn't know if he's going to be able to do it. But on the other hand, he's excited at the prospect of increasing his abilities, of becoming an even more chashiva athlete, right? So this is what we're saying here, that a person with true bitachon, he sees this all as Hashem moving him toward higher places, moving him toward better things. He says, I don't know what Hashem has in mind for me. I'm following his plan, but this is Hashem's next stage in the plan. I'm actually excited about it. This is a very high madrega, but we're learning chumash all of this in order to expose ourselves to high madregas. Okay, well, end with this for this week. What's this? I'm just gonna address. We're finished. I'm just going to address a few of the. Hashem is a part of someone's whose life is still coming. So, okay, I missed a few comments here. I'm sorry. I'm even for tzaddikim, they did yishtadlus with tefillah. Yaakov Avinu. Oh, that's a very good example of what we're talking about. The classic picture, the classic avoida, is not tefillah versus yishtadlus, but rather to really merge the two together. Adarabba, that's the chokhmah. The chokhmah Zalovitz says later. Anyway, please leave if you want to leave. Don't feel uncomfortable. But the chokhmah Zalovitz says later that on the contrary, part of the whole business here is to be able to develop that skill of doing yishtadlis while remaining connected to the understanding that I'm operating on a spiritual level here. So in a way, if you were able to replace tefillah with yishtadlis, that would be taking the easy way out. The question is, are you able to go about doing your yishtadlis with the understanding that it's talk to Hashem and therefore I need my tefillah? That is really the significance of this concept of merging the yishtadlis with the tefillah, not letting go of the yishtadlis. Doing the yishtadlis, but merging it with the tefillah. That's a very chashuva point. Yasher koach for raising that.
What did the comment mean about Yaakov? How we see it in Yaakov?
What's that? Well, I suppose that this is referring to where it says that Yaakov prepared himself for war, right? And he provided the gifts. These are both forms of material yishtadlis, and he did the tefillah. Another comment that we have here, again, Hashem is part of someone's life whose panos is still coming from Hashem, is being hand fed as well. Oh, how do we handle that? We said that if a person davens to Hashem and then he gets his parnasa, he's being hand-fed by Hashem. So what happens if a person already has parnasa?
Before he started davening,
right? Yeah. So the answer is that you are moving your parnasa to a higher place. All the different material aspects in your life can be coming at different levels. We strive to be turning the material in our life into something ruchni. And I turn my food into something of spiritual significance by starting to daven. Yes, I have parnasa today, but I'm going to daven to Hashem to continue giving me parnasa, and I'm also going to thank for the parnasa that He's giving me. Right? Instead of saying, "Well, parnasa is covered. What do I need to daven for? My parnasa is covered. I need to daven for X, Y, Z." No, I'm not taking that approach. I'm taking an approach of, "I have parnasa, but you know what? I want to move that to a higher level. I want that to actually bring that into the realm of the ruchni is part of my life. And therefore, I'm going to be davening to Hashem to continue giving me parnasa. So I'm enhancing my awareness that it's not just the given, it's coming from Him. I'm thanking Him for what I already have. And by doing that, your parnasa, your food, is a notch higher. It's a notch higher. And as for the question of, well, isn't everybody being hand-fed by Hashem? The answer is yes, on the one hand. But on the other hand, there are still different levels. There are different levels of how, just like there are different levels of Gilui Shechina, Shechina is everywhere. But at the same time, when a person brings himself to a higher level, the Shechina is closer, more intensely manifest by him. There are places where the Shechina is more intensely present than other places. Shechina is everywhere, but yet the Shechina is at the Kaisel. The Shechina is in a shul. The Shechina is in a proper Jewish home, even though the Shechina is also in the street, right? Also, the Shechina is all the time. But yet, there are times, Shabbos is a more Kaddish time than other times. There's more Shechina on Shabbos. So when we talk about, yes, we're all being handled directly by Hashem. But still, there are different levels of how intense that is. Okay, that deserves more elaboration, but here we will have Rachmanis on everybody, even the people who feel uncomfortable with it. Okay, agut tovach.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.